Grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 260 of the Dudes and Beer podcast, now officially brought to you by PodcastCadet.com. If you're a fan of podcasts like me, have a podcast you want to take to the next level, or one you're trying to start for yourself, family, church, school, just for the heck of it, whatever, stop on by PodcastCadet.com today. They have tons of professionals, everything from marketing and social media strategies to starting your show, distribution, monetization, all kinds of personalized one-on-one consultation just for you, customized just for you and your needs. Stop on by podcastcadet.com. Use the code DUDES20 on your way out the door to save 20% off your cart. So happy to have good friend John Bound from Daily News Collective on the air with us this evening, as well as our amazing guest. I've been chasing him for about a year now, wanting to have him on the show, and saw the fact that he was now a presidential candidate. Welcome to the show, author, speaker, transhumanist advocate, journalist, and now presidential candidate for the Republican Party, Zoltan Istvan. How are you this evening, sir?
Good. Thanks so much for having me on.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming on. Like I said in our pre-show just a minute ago, I've been wanting to have you on for quite a while. Transhumanism is a popular topic in our Facebook group, things like that. And I've really been wanting to have somebody on to kind of break down what that is. Everybody is always so afraid of like Skynet happening next week. And I don't think most people really have a true grasp of what the cause of transhumanism is and the chase for ethics when it comes to these things. Would you mind taking just a couple minutes explaining how it is that you got involved with transhumanism and the work that you do with it?
Well, absolutely. You know, so transhumanism is a social movement now of, you know, tens of millions of people around the world that want to use science and technology to radically modify the human body and also to modify the human experience. It can be anything from kind of exoskeleton suits to get disabled people out of wheelchairs. It can be things like brain implants. It can be things like driverless cars, but whatever it is, it's just radical technology. And then, you know, I wrote a novel, The Transhumanist Wager, about 5-6 years ago that luckily became a bestseller and sort of launched my career in the public world as a transhumanist advocate. And I've been doing a few political campaigns, and now I'm running for president, sort of underneath, on the transhumanist candidate banner.
And that's what I love, is that you are, as far as I know, the first transhumanist candidate in our election process. And I think it is really great to have someone like you who's done this research and who is advocating for these people. I mean, like I said, a lot of people kind of take things to the extreme, of course. But when you're talking transhumanism, you're talking about normal things like new artificial limbs, things like that, new ways that the human body can be augmented by machine to help us in our everyday life, that kind of stuff, as well as just with medical help, that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you know, what transhumanists are sort of best known for is really tackling the world of disability. When an Afghan vet gets his arm blown off, we're the group that puts on the robotic arm so that person can grab a beer and drink it. And, you know, that's really what transhumanism is known for. Transhumanists out there, you know, electively doing these things. We will in the future. But right now, what we're really doing is just trying to make people live a lot better, especially those that might have some disability or some type of, got hurt in some terrible way.
And that's one of the reasons why I love that you are actively running for office, is bringing this to the attention of people, trying to show that these things are needed in our society. That we need to start not only taking a focus to moving technology in that way, but we really need to start taking notice with our laws and regulations when it comes to ethics and involvement with that as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, the ethics field of the future is sort of a minefield right now. You know, people sometimes think some of my ideas are crazy, but they don't realize that. So first off, I'm from, you know, Silicon Valley, San Francisco. There is hundreds of millions, maybe billions of dollars flowing into things like brain implants, where you could connect your brain to the cloud, sort of like Elon Musk is doing with his company Neuralink. And this is a radical idea that we would, in real time, be able to think through a machine. In, you know, instead of using phones or whatever we're using right now to do this podcast, we would be doing it in our head. And yet, that is almost certainly the future, even the 5 to 10 year future. So it's pretty spacey for a lot of people. But no matter what you know, people think, it's happening because so much capital is flowing into these giant companies like Google and Apple and others that are essentially going to be pushing these technologies forward.
Yeah, most definitely. And I actually, John Bounds, just before we got in touch with you, I was doing some recording last night, and he's like, "Oh, this is a cool track, you know." And we started talking about how I made it, and I pointed to the wall at my little brainwave headband. And I was like, this whole track is actually made with my brainwaves. I did not touch a key one. I used a brainwave headband to connect to an app
And it sounded like the new Peter Gabriel album.
It was pretty wild. But the fact that I'm now driving my keyboard technology with my brainwaves and something that I augment my body
super
with.
Super intelligence.
Like,
these are words that. There's probably a whole lingo in Silicon Valley, but I would say that superintelligence used? Is that a common term that's used now? Intelligence explosion? Do you hear that?
Yeah, well, we hear superintelligence all the time because it's just an easy way to get the public to understand what we're talking about. We're not talking about an IQ of 170. We're talking about intelligence that is – you know, the computational power is trillions of, calculations per second, something that is way beyond what the human being can do in terms of that. So, yeah, it's superintelligence is really a key buzzword.
Yeah, absolutely. And right now, the big buzzword with big data and everything else, I mean, of course, IoT, the Internet of Things, has been the buzzword for almost a decade now. But now it is the AIoT, the artificial intelligence of things. And the way that this artificial intelligence is working with us on the daily to help, like you're saying, even help program artificial limbs faster, that kind of stuff. What was it? Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say absolutely. You know, AI is probably the biggest single subject. Well, there's two single subjects that are giant in terms of transhumanism and really giant in terms of where the species is headed. And this can be for any kind of global political landscape issues. It can just be for scientists and it can just be for the general public. But the first is genetic editing, this idea that we can sort of start changing our DNA. But the second is artificial intelligence. And, you know, I'm a little bit optimistic, but some experts say that within 10 to 15 years, we will have an artificial intelligence that's as intelligent as any human brain on the planet. But what's really interesting is within the 15 to 30 year window, the AI might become thousands of times smarter than us. That's when we kind of get to this Skynet potential scenario.
Singularity.
But maybe it's not Skynet. Maybe it's something really nice and helps us figure out how to, you know, help the planet and all and become a better species. But whatever it is, AI is absolutely one of the most important issues of our time.
That would be the singularity you're describing at that point.
Yes, yes. At some point, we get to this point called the singularity, which, you know, for the layperson, just to understand, the singularity is just a moment in time when AI becomes so powerful that the human brain can no longer even understand how powerful it's become. Because, you know, you have to understand, our brains are just 3 pounds of meat, of flesh. But AI, we're talking about fitting servers inside the Empire State Building. You know, already we have supercomputers that can do 300,000 trillion calculations per second. The fastest supercomputer in the world is an American, and it's 300,000 trillion calculations per second. So, you know, if you just take that out 20 years, it's going to be insanely how much faster it's going to be than that.
Yeah, I used to work the NVIDIA conference, the one that just got canceled. due to the awesome coronavirus. Yeah, my industry is just tanking right now as an AV tech. But it was so great to sit in there with people like Lockheed Martin and see how they are actively using AI programming along with the video chip technology. Like, there was one dude that was like live mapping the surface of the sun in my ballroom. Like, yeah, you know, we're looking at a live map of the sun right now. You can see the plasma flow here. And when you hear people from Lockheed Martin say that we can literally get ready for Moore's Law to collapse in the next 5 to 10 years, that like what we know about processor technology and how it's made and how many computations we can get and, you know, how many transistors fit onto a chip, it's getting ready to be a whole new world. They don't even know how amazing it's going to be yet.
Well, this is we have this thing called quantum computing out. Mm-hmm. And for those of you who are Bitcoin enthusiasts, you know, the Google quantum computing, they've said, well, the quantum computing can literally discover every single Bitcoin that's out there in literally 2 minutes.
Wow.
Versus what most people frame to mine Bitcoin. So you're talking about this billion-dollar currency being essentially unloaded in 2 minutes because of a new type of fast computational system. I mean, the world is changing, and I don't think people realize, give enough credit for the evolution of the microprocessor.
Yeah.
It's going to lead to the singularity, and we're humans are going to be left behind. Let's going to become one with it. It's crazy.
That's why I love that there are passionate people like you bringing this stuff to people's attention, just shooting flares up in the sky that, man, we've got to get an ethical hold on this before it happens. As of right now, we are so behind. Like, this country has no definition of digital identity. It took the EU to make cookies. Firefox just said, hey, all ISPs, guess what? If somebody is using us, you get nothing. Like, it's taking people like you and people like that to actively be in the forefront to try to do something preemptively ahead of time.
Well, and that is a major prerogative of what my presidential campaign is about. It's not because obviously I'm going to win. I'm not going to win. It's really about just saying, look, Donald Trump is not telling the country what's really happening. What's really happening is, for example, the military is being replaced by automation. The workforce is being replaced by – Trump likes to blame the immigrants. It's not immigrants that's changing capitalism. It's technology. So I'm just out there just shooting my flares, trying to get people to at least discuss it, because discussion is the most important way to move forward ethically, humanely, and also just so we understand what's best for the human race as this technology kind of comes into play. And believe me, capitalism's not going to wait for us to make good decisions.
No.
It's just going to put something on market. And if we're not smart about it, it could be disastrous. So we need more people discussing it. We need Congress talking about it. And, you know, frankly, it would be great to have a president who actually knows something about science, too.
Or to have some people around him that do as well. I know John Bowne had a question here for you.
Yeah, it's kind of a silly question, but when I knew I was going to be on with you, I did want to ask you this. As a Republican, do you see – and a futurist. All right, let me reword this. Let me set this up. As a Republican and a futurist, do you see a future for the Democratic Party?
Well, to be honest with you, I see probably a stronger future for the Democratic Party than I see for the Republican Party. I think the Republican Party might be doing very well now, but, you know, in the long term, Trump might be dramatically hurting it because, you know, this populism thing could go the wrong way really quickly,
absolutely.
Especially if he tries to take, you know, I mean, who knows what coronavirus happens if all of a sudden it, you know, results in martial law and all these other things, and it could easily end his bid for the presidency. You know, I mean, it could be the Democrats who end up, they're kind of more mild. And even though I got to say the Democrats have been effing up a lot, it seems like they just can't get their act together.
Yeah.
They're still, generally speaking, group of people out there. Now, you know, I'm running as a Republican because I am fiscally conservative, but I hold very libertarian social values. In fact, some of my values, ethical values and whatnot, moral values, are even left of most Democrats. I mean, I have an almost open immigration policy, and I'm completely so most people would say I'm more liberal than liberals, but you know, I think what's happening is that the Democrats just haven't really gotten together, and they probably will figure it out. I'm not sure if Biden is going to do that. But either way, I think as a country, the Republicans have to be – and this is the main reason I'm running as a Republican. If the Republicans can't get up to date with science, the party could easily lose its stature and just wither away. And that's really why I'm here. I feel Kelly has turned so dramatically hard left. I don't think hard left is good. I don't think hard right is good either. I just think somewhere in the center with a good balance is the right way for a democracy and a country to move forward. So that's sort of why I'm running, to try to steer this technology into the middle.
Well, I just want to throw a quote out there just to kind of cap what you just said. You know, George Washington said about our government, he said, "Government is not reason. It is not eloquence. It is force." And as you had said about populism, how it is a wild beast that can't be tamed. Not that we need to be tamed as Americans. We're free in our minds. We should be, but it can be taken the wrong way. It can be turned upon itself, really.
You know? Yeah, no, and I agree with you. You know, the main strategy of my candidacies that I've run, because I ran in 2016 and I ran for the gubernatorial position in California in 2018, is the scientific method. And no politician really is running on this. Most politicians make decisions from either, you know, kind of maybe their ethnical backgrounds or their religious backgrounds, or maybe it's a historical background that they make. But I like to make it based on the scientific method. So no populism whatsoever. This is just based on what is the most logical way to do the greatest good for the greatest amount of people in the country. And it's a very sound policy. There's no discrimination whatsoever against any single idea. It's how can I actually help the country in the most general way possible, so the greatest amount of people can be happy. Everybody. But we can satisfy a great, great majority of it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting that you brought up the scientific method, because that is something that we preach so hard on this show, is just follow the scientific method, people. You're allowed to take in any information. You're encouraged to take in all information. You're supposed to. That's what the world of hypothesis is.
That's what being a human actually is.
Yeah. You're supposed to be throwing it against the wall to see what sticks. Yeah. You know, and when you're not, given choices, Zoltan, that is when we end up where we are, where we have incumbents in charge for 30 years that do not literally vote the way that their constituency says to vote. And we have to do something about that. We really have to, as a republic, try to bring that power back under our reins. And to know that there are people like you out there that are about that, it's fantastic. It is such a breath of fresh air to know that even though you're out there, like you said, just firing flares so that people pay attention. Like, good God, if all I do is wake people up and get them to pay attention, great.
We're asleep until it happens, and it's going to happen very soon, that singularity. And if there's no one out there talking about the automation, talking about the technology that will reach a point of no return, then we're completely asleep.
Yeah.
It's going to happen any minute now.
Well, and at one of the conventions that I work, I actively heard a Harvard economist talking to a group of CEOs. And one of the things they were bringing up was automated trucking, all that kind of stuff, and how it's putting people out of work. And all that. And it literally got to the point where the economist was like, listen, do you think that these companies would be spending billions of dollars trying to figure out how to make an automated truck if there were people lining up to drive the truck? So how do you as a candidate think that we should get back on that track and kind of breathe new life into this?
Well, so, you know, what's really interesting is all these companies are spending billions of dollars on the automation, and yet our government is not even discussing what to do to counter that. So, you know, we have 4 million – just truck driving is a great example. We have 4 million truck drivers in America, and these are not like tame men. These are like bold, you know, men with guns at their side. They're not going to go down quietly when someone says a robot is taking your job. Go sit in the corner. So these are people that, like, you have to really worry about an uprising. Beyond the truck drivers, you have another 10 million people involved in the truck that also will be automated. Right. So now we're starting to talk about, you know, 10, 15 million jobs and a significant part of the economy, easily enough to put it into a recession if something was to go wrong. And I support a tax-free universal basic income because despite my libertarian tendencies, I can't imagine a scenario when those truck drivers are ever going to be hired anywhere else, because by the time they maybe get retrained to do something, another robot or another piece of software will replace that job. And, you know, my wife's a physician. Even her job, even delivering babies, even if she trained for 19 years, there's a time coming in the future when there's going to be a robot that can deliver babies 24 hours a day. It never sues the hospital. It doesn't care if it trips on a banana peel. It doesn't get sick or need whatever it is. These are hard facts for the American public to understand. But capitalism, as long as we continue to allow it to drive the economy, is going to is going to essentially replace human labor with automation and robots. So that's one of the reasons why I support a universal basic income, is because we need a policy that can keep the truck drivers from pulling out their guns and saying, you know, I want my job back. We need to give them something. So they said, you know what? I may not be rich, but I don't have to work anymore, and I can still raise a family or do whatever else I need. And again, my basic income is tax-free. It monetizes federal land. Other people's basic incomes don't do that, but whatever happens, it's going to be something like that. Otherwise, as we replace 50 or 100 million jobs in the United States, we're going to find ourselves against pitchforks by the mob, by the people.
Absolutely. And if you want just a real quick rehash, people, go back to the late 70s and take a look at the trucker strike that happened, where the truckers union went on strike and was like, you know what? Till we get treated fairly and get our right goodness, we aren't moving. The country almost shut down. The infrastructure to get groceries to grocery stores, everything else, that's all via trucking. Fuel coming to we deal with it all the time with hurricanes here in Texas. Whenever we have hurricanes, like, get ready for some price gouging on gas, because trucks won't be able to make it to you for a hot minute.
Yeah, they're the arteries of the United States.
Yeah.
And those arteries can be replaced.
Yeah.
And that is something that the bottom's going to drop out.
Yeah.
And, all the unions in the world aren't going to be able to prop it back up.
Well, and I've even posed the fact on here before, because we went through quite the sex bot craze on Dudes and Beer for quite a while. Anytime I see a sex bot article pop up, I absolutely share it with the group, and it inevitably just goes through a string of replies and conversations. But Houston, Texas was one of the first places in the world to actively block a robot sex brothel. And it's one of those that I've posited, like, so, okay, we get to the point of a sentient robot. What do we do when they start finding the pictures on the internet of the sex robots that we just built to have sex with? You know, like, isn't that just going to spring the Matrix on us?
You're a very strange person.
Like, look at what they did to us. Look at how they subjugated us to these horrible things.
Zoltan, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I did want to ask you this earlier. And since he brought this up, I just wanted to know your opinion of seeing Blade Runner for the first time. Sorry.
Well, no, I mean, Blade Runner is a fantastic movie, and I keep watching the second one again and again, because it's so cinematography, brilliant. Yeah. It's just a beautiful film. But the first one is very impactful in a very emotional way, because, you talk about what it's like to die. And of course, transhumanism's number one goal is to try to overcome death with science and technology. And while we haven't got there yet, it's amazing the amount of money just in the 6-7 years that I've been kind of pushing forth the movement. The amount of money has gone from $1 billion to over $100 billion. And Bank of America recently said by 2025, we're going to have $600 billion in just the life extension in the, what we call the anti-aging industry, people literally working to change your genetic structure so that you don't age anymore. And this is almost inevitable too, just like the singularity. We're going to get to a point when we don't die, we don't worry about those things. Yeah. And these kind of structural changes at the institutional level, whether you get married, whether you choose to have children, I mean, everything is going to change. Of course, the Houston government said no to sex robots. Yeah. They're conservatives and they're probably worried about this whole thing beyond the singularity. I mean, we're just talking about, you know, like you're not even getting married anymore because you don't want to have children. You're living 10,000 years. Maybe you'll have a child after 9,000 years. I mean, it's just such a different mindset.
Yeah. Yeah. Whenever you start really going Robert Heinlein and Methuselah's children on it, and the concept of, you know, somebody living for thousands of years, you really do have to take those concepts into consideration. And to know that these people like Robert Heinlein had these concepts and these ideas back in the 30s, back in the 40s, they were talking about like quantum computing and writing data on atoms. And now we are actively doing it. It's mind numbing to see the surge and all that kind of stuff. We have about 5 minutes left with you, Zoltan. Tell everybody where they can go to find out more about your cause, more about transhumanism, where they can go to find your books. Of course, other than the Dudes and Beer store, because they're being added there, after your guest spot. But you know, where can they go to find out more about your presidential campaign, all that kind of good stuff?
Sure. Well, you know, I think the first thing to know, just your listeners, is that I've been a journalist for almost 25 years. I began my career at National Geographic, and I've now been writing recently for the opinion section of the New York Times, for Quartz. If you have any subject matter that you're interested in, just type that subject in and my name and Google it, because you'll probably find I've written 230 opinion essays over the last 5 years, essentially. So that's the easiest way to find out something about what I've said, whether it's love and marriage, whether it's robot sex, which I've of course talked about, you know, whether it's environmental issues or a basic income. And then, you know, my campaign website is Zoltan2020.com. And of course, I also have a personal website, which is just transhumanism oriented. And that's ZoltanEshvan.com, where you can see, you know, different interviews or articles and my books that I've written, because I've written a couple of books. And we even have a new documentary. I'm happy to announce that we have a new documentary called Immortality or Bust, which was in about my 2016 campaign. I drove this crazy coffin bus, 40 foot long, across America, and delivered a transhumanist bill of rights. And we've been working on a documentary forever, and we're hoping it'll be out soon. So there's all these fun things to discover.
Wow. Fantastic. Yeah, I mean, Zoltan is everywhere you want to be, folks, on the internet. I'm here to tell you, just Google his name, and I guarantee you, you will find tons of amazing stuff out there. He is all over the place and quite literally one of the big movers and shakers in the transhumanist movement. Thank you so much for taking the time. Good luck in the presidential run. I can't tell you what it was to have you on. I'd love to have you on to talk more about the documentary, as well as more about transhumanism and really crack this nut for our audience a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. When the documentary comes out, hopefully 4 or 5 months, it's already out.
Okay.
It did an award. I'd love to come back on because we'd love to talk more about it, but we're sort of under that signing clause and all these other things in the distribution now. But thank you so much for having me on. It's been great to talk to you. Sorry I'm such a short time.
Absolutely.
I am officially still on the campaign trail.
That's right.
Literally, life is pretty brutal at the moment, but hopefully I'll have more time next time.
Well, absolutely. Thank you so much for taking the time this evening. Godspeed with the campaign. I want you to know it's not often that I let people publicly know, but you got my vote.
Yeah, good to talk to you, Zoltan. Thanks.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. I appreciate the vote.
Absolutely. Take care and have a great evening.
All right. Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's just an incredible conversation to sit and have, to hear a presidential candidate going through stuff like this and really trying to bring the light of truth of transhumanism to people, trying to bring just that concept to them.
It's an alternate reality, too. And, you know, a lot of people out there are going to have their own, you know, reservations already, their own prejudices built up. You know, it's a whole new reality, you know, and when you, the more you learn about it, the more you realize, like, you just can't fight it. That, yeah, it's right over that hill.
It's right here.
And what are we going to do when we get there? And, you know, to put all of your faith and your hope into that the robots won't turn around and kill all of us, it's basically where we're at right now. And Congress is like trying to get a hold of it and saying, look, yeah, we're starting to realize not only is this a problem to humanity, but to our entire economy.
Yeah.
It just changes the whole game. And so at the end of that monopoly board of that singularity, you know, you finally get to the end and it's singularity. Who owns all the properties on the board? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because whoever does owns it all.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it is that concept of trying to bring everything together under one umbrella. And when you're talking about the singularity, when you're talking about the full-on merging of man and machine and technology, like Zoltan said, like you said, we are right up against that. We are right there, right now. We have brain implants. Well,
fortunately, our generation grew up with transhumanist, bionic man.
As a
kid, being a 7-year-old kid and seeing, you know, some dude come out of a mountain and they've rebuilt him. You know, it just made
better,
perfect sense.
Faster, stronger.
Exactly. And now, and those things are, we have bionic people now.
Yes. You
know? And,
absolutely. Yeah. Like, we have bionic people competing in the Olympics. Mm-hmm. So much so that it became an issue the last Olympics. They had to actively ask, should we be allowing these competitors into the Olympics? Do they actively have an advantage? The track runner who lost a leg and now has a graphite leg, is he somewhat faster?
Yes.
And
probably
pretty fast.
Yeah.
It's interesting to talk to somebody who is actively in that field to really kind of start decoding that a little bit.
But then again, yeah, it's a humongous tragedy just as us as a species, because we really don't need machines. There are people among us that already have gifts throughout our whole history as human beings that have been gifts that we can't explain, you know? And to look towards machines and say, well, this will be a lot better, it's foolhardy. You know, it really is. I mean, I'm not insulting what he's doing, because what he's doing is completely necessary. But at the same time, you know, there's a humanity that we still have to believe in. And the tragedy, I guess, if I was writing a novel, like a Kurt Vonnegut novel or something, at the end, it's just the end. I guess the Blade Runner kind of does that. But, you know, it's the end of our humanity. It's like that spark of genius and art and everything that we created is gone.
Well, and the one thing that I loved about his campaign is the fact that he straight up says, like, I do not expect to win the presidency. I do not expect to win the seat.
Yeah.
I don't expect to get to the point of nomination or endorsement by the party in that way. What I'm trying to do is just shoot flares. I'm trying to reach the largest audience possible with this message as fast as I can.
Is he our age?
A little bit older.
Yeah, I mean, this is a good time for him to start.
Well,
he's got a good 20, 30 years in front of him, you know, going by Joe Biden and Bernie, that, you know, it's good that he's gotten started now. And, look forward to hearing a lot more from him. I mean, we've got candidates out there from Generation X, you know, like, isn't Tulsi Generation X? I think she is.
She may be.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we definitely have people from Generation X running. Yeah. What I love is the fact that, much like this show, he's just trying to bring the light to people. He's just trying to show people. Mm-hmm. Like, I figured it out whenever I had Dr. John Hall on the first time. And a week later, I got an email from a lady in Israel that was like, I'm a targeted individual. I've been targeted by a government. I need to get help. Who do I contact for help? And I was like, dude, I don't care if nobody but that one person listens to my show ever again. Ever. This show is now for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And to see that there is a candidate out there that is like, this message needs to get out so badly
mm-hmm.
that these are the means I'm willing to take. These are mm-hmm. this is what I'm willing to do to get that out there. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and there's it does seem a little radical, but you know, I mean, as far as he said, he was more libertarian. Adam Kokesh is very libertarian.
Good old Adam Kokesh.
And Adam is another part of that Generation X.
Is he in jail again?
No. He's got some stuff coming up. But Adam, he just wants to rewrite the whole thing. He just wants to start from scratch.
Oh well, I'm not saying I am not a proponent of that. I'm a big believer in the Constitutional Convention.
Yeah.
In the Convention of States.
Of course, Adam, I'm probably – it's a little more complicated than that. I'm not trying to campaign for Adam, but I'm just saying like we have a whole nother generation that's coming up, and he's an example of that.
Yeah.
And people have to start getting used to that is that, you know, our ideas are going to be – from our generation are going to be a lot different than some guy who can't even quote, you know, the Declaration of Independence?
You know what it says.
Yeah. Well, that, you know thing, what it says. That thing that says, yeah.
You know what it says, you bone-faced pony soldier.
Yeah. Said that to him.
Hey, the only advice in I have, and you people know I don't really get political frequently on the show. We talk about politics, but we don't get political. There's a difference.
Oh, no.
My only advice to you, Democratic Party, is this. Yeah. When you try to out crazy, you look crazy. Don't try to out crazy with things like bone faced pony soldier and stuff like that. Don't. You can't fake crazy either.
I mean, I really don't have a stake in any party.
Let's leave President Camacho where he's at.
I just consider myself an American, but
yes.
The Democrats, I'll just be totally honest with you, they scare the hell out of me and my family. I mean, some of the stuff they've been doing, it's you know, and I'm not like saying, okay, well then, you know, the Republicans win. You know, I'm just saying it's gotten so crazy with Schumer just the other day, you know. Threatening the Supreme Court. I mean, I don't want my daughter to see that. I don't want people in that level of government getting that nuts.
Yeah. Well, and that's why
I don't care what party you're a part of.
That's why it's good to have transhumanists like him out there. Advocates like they're out there that are actively taking it upon themselves to go to the Senate. Go to local houses of Congress and representative houses in states and say, this is what is going on. This is the technology as it exists. Yeah. And we need to do something about this. We need to figure out an ethical plan for things now before we end up where we are with the internet, where everything's a shade of gray and we have no digital identity.
Well, it's literally going to be like,
if your information is stolen, there is nothing you can do. Nothing. It's just gone.
When cars were invented in the 19th century and people are, you know, riding around on horses and wagons.
Oh, yeah. And there were just deaths all over.
And
there were deaths all over until they came up with a stoplight.
And all of a sudden a car shows up and there are no more horses. There's no more wagons.
Yeah.
You know, they're gone.
Yep.
And that's just a little precursor.
Yeah. Yeah, and it happens rapidly. Happens very rapidly.
I'm going to have this robot open this beer for me.
That's a sparkling water. That's a prop beer.
What's that?
That's a prop beer. Because I know.
Wrong show.
I know. well, I know that you were actively driving home later, so I threw some waters in there just in case, John.
I'll be riding my horse home.
Yeah, right? So, you know. What do you see going on in the next few years when it comes to AI, that kind of stuff, John?
Next few years?
Yeah, I mean, let's say next five.
It's 2020 now, so I think for all, yeah, I hope everybody out there is getting their 2020 on. I know I am. I mean, this is exciting. It's 2020. You know, I was born in 1971, went through the 70s, and when it hit 1980, we went through the 80s, and when it hit, you know, I know I'm not just telling you something that you already know.
So, but John knows how a calendar works.
Exactly. But we're in 2020 now, and you're saying the next, you know, 3 to 5 years, I think within 5 years, I mean, do we really want to go down the rabbit hole of sex robots? I think there's a definitely a possibility that we will fail miserably as far as the 5 year window. I think we'll probably more than likely be looking at, like, you know, 2040, more along the lines of, you know, just we're at the singularity. But in 5 years, I mean, things are moving so slow, and, you know, it's the thing about automation. That's the thing that has to be watched.
Yeah.
And what he was saying in the industries that are exploding right now with
exactly, the
explosion of intelligence, of super intelligence, that's what we need to look at. And anything that's AI driven, you know, anything, any kind of micro technology, any kind of, you know, anything that's getting smaller, as you said, Moore's Law.
Yep.
Those are the things to at least look at, you know. I mean, I'm not going to sit here like a Swami and Nostradamus.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole thing. I'm just saying, that's where are we? Where are we? You know, and what are people projecting?
Yeah.
In Silicon Valley, you know, within the, but at the same time, you know, Silicon Valley has become such a tyrant to freedom of speech, and you know, there things, I don't think they have as much control or responsibility. It's not like, oh, these people are bad kind of thing. It's just, you know, with Twitter right now, with Jack Dorsey has a possibility of being kicked out of his CEO spot.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the way things are going to roll, but it's a roll of the dice. The whole thing is just a roll of the bones, you know, as yeah. Rush would say. And, you know, it does take people like Zoltan to come along and be like, hey
wake up, pay attention.
This is what's happening right now.
So, yeah.
We're going to need more of those people, and there will be a chorus of people like him soon. I'll say that's my prediction.
Yeah.
The next 5 years is that we're going to hear more people like him speak.
Yeah. I think in the next 5 years, we are definitely going to have an entire crop of Zoltans pop up. There's people like Gray Scott, futurist Gray Scott, who we've had on the show that is talking about some of the same stuff. It's out there all over the place now.
But as you pointed out, Robert Heinlein, I mean, there's always been futurism. We've always had Carl Sagan's, and, you know, even Kubrick was taking us a little bit further, even, you know, back when cinema was cinema. And we can't even project. We don't even have. I mean, we've got some decent cinema out there that gets close, but as far as a vision of the future, you know, really, Blade Runner and Stanley Kubrick really just knocked it out of the park. But, you know, that scene at the end of Blade Runner where the maker God, basically, who's made these androids. And is it Rucker Hauer is the name? Mm-hmm. And he's pushing his eyes into his skull.
Yeah.
And he's realizing that, you know, he's killed his maker. I mean, and when I saw that, I was like, oh crap, that's real. That's not a fantasy. That's going to happen.
Yeah, it is definitely a possibility. And I mean, you know, when you're talking about futurists and sci-fi and things like that, you know, the first thing that will come to anybody's mind is probably Rossum, you know, Isaac Asimov, Rossum's Universal Rule of Robotics, rules, rather. There are three of them. You know, a robot can do no harm to a man. Robot can do no harm to himself, and rule three can't break one or two. You know, so like a robot cannot let you come to harm. He has to sacrifice himself in order to save you. But that's what ends up happening with things like the Matrix and stuff like that, where the AI takes over and it becomes like, well, you're actively the issue here. hey, creator, we figured out that you're the problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we have to put these boundaries in place kind of on ourselves. There's a reason why the UN has put forth regulations on battlefield robots and things like that, and saying no AI on the battlefield. And even here recently, in last week's episode of Dudes and Beer, we were talking to Mike Turber about the ATIP program, the Tic Tac Gimbal and fast mover UAPs from the USS Nimitz, mm-hmm. and how a UFO researcher was saying how they absolutely they were basically showing signs of AI. They were showing the fact that they were probably more programmed or using some kind of AI in the way that they were acting, rather than somebody who was like there trying to creep around. Because they definitely made their presence known. They played cat and mouse, things like that.
Yeah.
And even living here in Austin, they just said that they were doing the future warfare program right here in Austin. I mean,
think about it. If there are UFOs, and there probably are, yeah. I mean, I haven't seen one personally, but yeah. I know plenty of people that have.
Sure.
Wouldn't their level of digital technology and AGI, artificial general intelligence, wouldn't their super intelligence just be – you know, just light years beyond ours. So
yeah,
it's possible that the aliens themselves could be some kind of cyborg even. You
know? Could be.
Yeah.
Could be. And that's all yet to be seen. I mean, everything like we were saying with Mike, there is so much technology that's out there in the world of microfusion, that kind of stuff right now. Fusion is being played with on a regular basis. Now it's household name when it comes to physics,
yeah,
and plasma physics, stuff like that. So none of this is really out of the realm of possibility within the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah. Fusion. Yeah, definitely adds a whole nother.
I mean, we're already growing brains in test tubes. We've already got all sorts of programs like that going on.
Well, nanotechnology is already, it's already been what, around for 20 years now. So
yeah.
And the point we're at with nanotechnology, you know, surgically and everything is way beyond where we thought we would be at this point. So
yeah,
that's a good sign, but yeah. Having some kind of intelligent being, like, you know, something out of the black hole. You remember that movie?
Oh, yeah. No, I just watched it recently.
Where you've got these evil robots.
Yep.
You know, with spinning blenders and stuff.
Yep.
And they're coming,
yeah,
floating, and they're coming to get you. You know, that's, that sucks.
It's not a good thing.
No.
And they, you know, I don't think we're 5 to 10 years away from that. I'd say we're probably a good 50 years away from that, away from any kind of AI that is sentient in its own way, that kind of stuff. We definitely have AI that is making decisions, that is choosing targets for military.
And that kind how of will stuff. We feel as human beings? Like, will we feel, you know, will everything, will we end up in floating chairs like in that movie where everyone's fat and they're all on the UFO? What's the Disney movie, the Pixar movie, the...
I don't know.
Oh, gosh.
I don't know.
Anyway, there's people screaming at the radio right now. Anyway, will we end up just fat, stupid, and lazy? Or will we, through transhumanism, evolve? And I think that's what Zoltan's talking about, is that we will evolve.
Well, we have no choice but to evolve. Like, right. it's coming.
So, as I said earlier about the aliens being way ahead of us digitally, is that who we become? Is that how they got to who they are? Their planet's dying, you know, and or that whole mindset. They're trying to explore their solar system. You know, at some point, the Methuselah kicks in, and we're, you know, we're in a database floating around Saturn, you know, 10,000, 12,000 years from now, all of our minds.
Yeah.
And we decide, well, we can make sentient beings, and we can be in those sentient beings. I mean, how close are we to that? Because I need that to happen.
Well, you're not going to be floating around Saturn anytime soon, John.
I've got to get out of this universe. Look, I got problems here.
Okay? I got things to do.
Yeah. I promised my family we'd get out of this universe by 2030.
Well, it definitely is the fact, like we're saying, you got to be comfortable with that merge of man and machine. I mean, I with a child myself, it's one of those... I allow him to use technology, but I monitor how he uses technology very closely.
Yeah.
As of right now, with him at 3 years old, I try to use technology as little as possible as a here, occupy yourself.
Well, you
situation.
Know, you didn't catch me on it. I said universe. I said leave it. Yeah, now, of course, you can't leave the universe.
Yeah.
But how do we know that? How do we know there aren't more
there
universes?
There are parallel universes. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's my goal. Yeah. I want to go to the next universe.
Well, CERN is working on that.
Okay.
They are actively working on things just like that right now.
Got a lot of ambition.
But... It's just the fact of monitoring how you use technology, how you interface with this, how we utilize AI and
WALL-E.
And how we actively incorporate that in our life. And that's what we're going to see more of over the next 5 years, is augmented reality on a daily basis, much more of the AI on a daily basis.
What do
where
you think about virtual reality right now?
Virtual reality is fantastic.
Yeah,
it's great.
It is. Do you own anything?
That's a virtual reality machine sitting right there next to you.
Well, I own an Oculus, and the motion sickness is just too much.
Well, it can be for some people.
And there are so many glitches. It's like the Atari or the Commodore 64. I mean, it's in its infancy right now.
No, it's pretty out there. There's some great stuff going on.
Oh, I know. I've seen it. I've seen it. I'm just saying, when you're loading up a screen, it... And people know this, and they probably say this out there, well, you got to have a more powerful computer.
Yes, you do.
I have a pretty powerful computer and a good graphics card, good enough. And so when you're loading up a game and you got the goggles on, it starts flipping out. And if your eyes are open, if you do that enough, it has this effect on you, like it might actually give you a seizure.
Oh, I'm sure it could. You've got two video screens in there.
So my thing, if there are Silicon Valley people listening out there, and there probably are people listening.
Oh, absolutely.
Was on.
Absolutely.
Can somebody do something? And I've got a simple solution for that. When it gets to that loading screen, put something else up until it's done loading, because it's completely annoying, and that's what's going to happen. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
I mean, I got my little apartment in, I've got my cabin out in the woods and the mountains in virtual reality. Sure.
Yeah. Well, I think it's much more the fact of people like Billy Joe Kane, who is out there with the Radical Empathy Education Foundation using virtual reality to train people how to spot those that are victims of human trafficking, those who have been through that, being able to.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can now put somebody in a situation that they'd never
so
be able to be in.
There's so many educational things. I'm not knocking virtual reality.
To be at CES this last year and literally see some guys on laydown sleds with glasses on, basically playing the exact same game that was in Lawnmower Man. It's there. It's happening. So just get ready for it, folks. Get ready for the singularity. It will happen. I cannot wait until the singular moment that we have Zoltan Istvan back on. John Baum, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Tell everybody where they can go to hear all the great stuff from Daily News Collective.
Just go to dailynewscollective.com and then click on podcasts. That's where you're going to find me. And I'm trying to reformat my format. I want to have more guests on. I want to have different. I want to look at clips and talk about them. And I don't know. I've got ideas, but you know, I'm only on show number 35. What are you on? Like 3,000 here?
260.
Yeah. So yeah, you go through a little. So you go through some changes. But
you do. You evolve. You evolve. You move on.
Yeah. So. But I want to talk to people. Yeah. You know, I want to interview people. I was doing that in the beginning. I kind of got away from that, but you know, I want to start doing that again.
Yep. And you know, while you're online checking out everything from John Baum and Daily News Collective, John Baum Politics, make sure to stop on by both of our parent networks. HC Universal Network is where you can find everything. HCUniversalNetwork.com. While you are online there, make sure to stop on by dudesandbeer.com. That is where you can find all the episodes.
And do it at your own leisure.
It's where you can find the Knowledge Vault. We will have the Transhumanist Bill of Rights up there rapidly for this episode. Till next time, everybody, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, can't be good. Be good at it.
Thanks for listening to this episode Bye-bye. Of the Dudes and Beer Podcast. To listen to our audio streams or chat with us live, download the official Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit HCUniversalNetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. And until next time, drink responsibly.